Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program is the Copyright Forum, and joining us in the studio, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They are here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art. And based on the conversation that just happened, it could be one for the books today. So stay tuned if you wish. If you have a question about copyright law or what's in the public domain, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. The 8-second delay is engaged. Paul, Polly, Bill are here. It's copyright or something like it coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today, and we have our great panel to answer your copyright questions. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues. If you have a question about intellectual property, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, or even you could tweet, if you wish, at @WAMCVoxPop. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Polly, Bill, Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, hey. Ray.
Well, everybody got all the off-color material out of their systems now?
You never know.
We'll see.
I'm hoping. I'm really hoping that is the case. All right, before we get to any intellectual property questions that our listeners might have, what's all this business about Taylor Swift I heard on the news today?
Well, she's mad because her record company, the record company that she was signed to for apparently her first 6 albums, was sold to somebody that she doesn't like.
Right.
And they didn't give her an opportunity to buy her own.
So these are the master tapes of her recordings.
The master tapes of the recordings. And the copyrights to those with most record deals, you know, belong to the record company.
Right.
And so it was their right to do it. Apparently she'd been trying for years to buy the masters back from the company. But so she's, you know, upset about that. I'm kind of surprised that she didn't do what Frank Sinatra did, or if you saw the movie Ray, you know, about Ray Charles. When they got to a certain point of popularity, they started, their deals with record companies were license deals. We're going to license you the right to sell the master for 10 years, and then it comes back to us. And she's probably doing that now. I don't know.
But now, years ago, there was an issue with McCartney trying to buy back the recordings, right? And then Michael Jackson bought them.
The publishing.
That was the publishing.
That was the publishing. The songwriting side.
Ah. All right. Well, our number here is 800-348-2551. The lines are already loading up. Let's go to Kathy in Seward. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. I know you're calling this the Copyright Forum, but this is a patent question.
Okay.
I hope you can help me with it. I know a person who worked for a company and got his name on patents either for devices or processes in this company that was a manufacturing firm. He was squeezed out of the company eventually after having helped, you know, start it. And I was wondering, you know, does he have, you know, any kind of rights to those patents?
Well, it would probably depend on the contract that he originally had with the original company in terms of who owns intellectual property that's developed in the company.
Yeah, in the absence of a contract, and we're not patent lawyers, and
I was realizing that.
I mean, on the copyright, if this was a copyright question, it would be the employer is going to own, you know, whatever creations that the employee the employee made. And I suspect patent is the same way in the absence of a written agreement.
Especially
to the
if he used company resources to develop the device
right.
or process.
Well, 30 years ago,
okay.
A large
Thank
medical
you.
Company that I worked for absolutely required all employees to turn over all intellectual property, ideas, and that sort of thing to the company, to the medical center in this case. And I know that that has modified, morphed a little bit over the years, but I would suspect that that would be the most likely situation. But
is that an implicit contract? In other
no,
words, if you don't
no.
sign a contract, does it automatically go to the company that you work for?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah.
I believe that's the case for patents, but I'm not sure.
But most companies are going to have a written contract
yeah.
to that effect.
Right.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp here to answer your intellectual property questions on Vox Pop. Joel in Amherst. Joel, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Somehow got involved in a financial fraud that was documented in a movie called The China Hustle, which was directed and produced by the same person that did Enron, the smartest guys in the room.
Huh.
In this movie, it's documented that about 250,000 Americans lost $30 to $40 billion investing in Chinese reverse merger frauds. I'm going to come around to the intellectual property piece of this in a second. So I spent years in the Delaware Court of Chancery winning a court case along with other shareholders that got duped. And many of these companies, they were just manufacturing their accounting numbers and submitting fictitious numbers to the SEC. And when they got delisted and deregistered, hundreds and hundreds of companies, shareholders were just kind of left to their own devices. What I learned after a few years was that many of these Chinese companies that come over here are judgment proof. Meaning that if they do discover that it was financial fraud and the capital, the investment money is already over in China, it's mm-hmm. almost impossible to get it back. There's no justice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know Senator Rubio's office, and you know they estimate that there's, and maybe you mentioned this on the show, $650 billion a year in intellectual property theft from China. I'm just wondering if you guys could, are these companies also judgment proof when it comes to these sorts of situations?
Pretty much.
And I mean, how do you foresee this developing over the years? And if you could speak a little bit to the connection between intellectual property theft from China and the financial frauds that have been going on, that's the reason I'm calling.
Yeah, I'm not a international attorney, and I've only had a few dealings with knockoff goods coming in from China. And, you know, usually I look to whoever brought them in, you know, the U.S. entity that's responsible for bringing them in, because it just seems to me that the idea of going to China and trying to get a judgment and executing on it, or getting a judgment here and trying to execute it on it in mainland China, is a fool's folly.
Yeah, financially, it just wouldn't be. I mean, it just doesn't seem like it would be feasible.
Yeah.
And legally, I'm not sure it would be feasible either.
Well, is China a signatory to the Berne Convention?
That was my next question. I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah,
either.
But I mean, historically, it's kind of interesting when I hear people complain about China's treatment of or cavalier attitude toward copyright, because for years and years and years in the 1800s, the United States was doing what China's doing now.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Charles Dickens had to do his big tour of the United States, because American publishers stole his works and republished them here without his permission. And the only way he could get any money from, like, the Christmas Carol and things like that was to come and do a live show of them.
Mm. There was the movie about Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah.
About 10 or 15 years ago, and about
Topsy-Turvy,
and it was about exactly that, where the U.S. Through the 1800s was the biggest pirate and, you know, intellectual property thief in the world, and it was only when it started becoming a net exporter of intellectual property, and, you know, mainly film and literature and manufacturing. that the United States started taking intellectual property laws seriously.
Well, are the intellectual property laws the same now, or have they improved since those days?
In the U.S.?
Well,
in the U.S., they've improved, I would say.
Yeah, they're still not terrific for creators, but they're much better than they used to be.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law are here. You are there. Pick up the phone, give us a call. We'll be back. Yes, strange, beautiful. It's the Vox Pop Copyright Forum. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Bill Westwood is here. Polly Law is here. And Paul Rapp is here. And Tim is in Olive Bridge. Tim, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wrote a song for my wife and my wedding several years ago. And I would like to get it copywritten. I would like to get it out there to be recorded and possibly, you know, find somebody that's really interested in it. The main problem is that I have the lyrics, but I'm not a musician, so I do not have the tune, like, transposed into notes, and I don't have a recording of the song. So how would I go about getting that copywritten and protected before I release it in any public way?
Well, you can just sing into a tape recorder,
or your phone,
and make a recording, and you can use that as your deposit.
Yeah, and keep in mind that it was copyrighted from the time you wrote it down.
Well, he didn't write it down. That's the problem.
But
I do have it the lyrics written.
Okay,
but like I said, not the tune.
Well, the lyrics are copyrighted as soon as you write them down. You could register those separately.
Yeah, you can. You know, I mean, what we're saying here, and we should say this at the beginning of every show, is that, you know, the copyright exists upon a work's creation, and then registering it with the Copyright Office
gives you protection.
Gives you better protection. It's your sworn statement that you created the thing when you did. But, you know, really, if you just sing into your phone and send that recording in, you know, register the melody and the lyrics, and you're good to go.
Copyright.gov.
Great.
Yep, copyright.gov.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Tim. We appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, the Copyright Forum on Vox Pop. Karen in Amherst. Karen, you're on.
Hello. I'm calling about an intellectual property matter. I heard you say to a woman who called earlier that working for a company, you're required to turn over any of your intellectual property. Does that apply in an academic setting where, for example, a researcher might have ideas or diagrams that are then used, say, online to get more funding for a science lab or department?
In my experience, it varies from institution to institution.
Yeah.
Some institutions have a carve-out for their faculty, and the faculty is allowed to keep the copyright to the work that they create. There are other schools where both the students and the faculty are required to relinquish their copyrights to the institution.
Yeah, and I think in a scientific research setting as well, that the institution will. I mean, sometimes they'll split it, or they'll give they'll give the individual a percentage of the patent to encourage them to invent stuff. But you know, usually the institution holds on to the lion's share of the of the inventions.
It's not a patent issue. It's more with, say, a postdoc who has, you know, ideas that are being used, but the person isn't being credited for their work in any, like, written document or publication.
Well, go ahead, Polly.
I think you need to look at your contract, or this person needs to look at their contract and see what the institution expects is as far as turning over of intellectual property.
And remember too that ideas themselves aren't protectable.
Yeah, it's the expression of the ideas that are.
And diagrams. Say if someone used a diagram online to get more funding for their project, because there's an imbalance of power there. Whoever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Karen. Thank you very much for the call. We now go to Rick. Rick in Richmond. Rick, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. My son, I hope, is an upcoming actor, and I have a question. As he's out there volunteering for different college scenes that they put their portfolios together, things like that, how can an actor sort of protect himself from the content being sort of spliced together in a non-flattering way, since he's just, you know, it doesn't have much leverage?
No, we're kind of losing you there, Rick. But
yeah.
Oh yeah, your connection is not good there, sir.
He's from the Berkshires. I understand this.
Right.
This is like a conversation with me if you call me at home.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way you can protect yourself under current law. I think there should be, but I don't think there is. Anyone
Well, but
disagree?
if you're going to be an actor, you are putting yourself out in the public eye. And so to expect the amount of privacy that you or I would expect we're not putting ourselves out into the public eye.
But I think he was talking about splicing stuff together in an unflattering way.
He's talking about deep fakes, really. I mean, there was a whole thing with Nancy Pelosi looking drunk, and it was just the thing was slowed down. And, you know, and Facebook or YouTube or whoever was posting it didn't take it down. And, you know, and I'm glad they didn't. I mean, they will tag these things saying that this is fake or this has been altered, but you know, when you start taking stuff down that people create with media, you're really on a slippery slope. You know, what happens with parody? What happens with, you know, something that's genuinely funny that is obviously not the, you know, the genuine article.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It is the Copyright Forum. Bill Westwood, Poly Law, and Paul Rapp here. And let's go to John in Vermont. John, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Anyway, I'll try to make this simple. I have an idea for a game. It's a game based on vanity that people would play home. It uses existing technologies, and I integrate them to create this game. In my humble opinion, it's a multi-million dollar thing, bigger than Atari, bigger than Nintendo and all that stuff. But here's the thing. I am not a software engineer or anything like that. I have a concept of how this thing would work, and I know it would easily work because of what I know existing technologies could do. Now, it's been suggested to me that I get an engineer for this kind of thing and that I have him sign a confidentiality agreement. But that doesn't seem so binding because if you're a nobody with an idea, like Bill Gates once was, you don't have no money to go after somebody who might know somebody or themselves have tons of cash to steal your idea, and you know you could never go to court and succeed. So how would you proceed with a concept? I was told I can't copyright a concept, even if the technology is beyond my explaining it. So what would you recommend with something like this?
All right, while they answer, John, if you would do me a favor and turn that radio down. We're hearing it in the background on delay, and it would be great. All right, now, panel, go ahead.
All you can do is the confidentiality agreement. I mean, you know, get references from the engineer you hired. Make sure the guy's straight up. And
that's an enforceable contract.
Yeah, and that's really as good as you can do because right now you've got an idea. You've got nothing that you can even take to a patent attorney.
I had this idea for years, and I wouldn't even know where you get. I need somebody that's capable of engineering, you know.
I would, if you're really interested, I would start doing some research, look around at some of the various game companies. Maybe you can license your idea to the game company.
Okay.
And have them develop it.
As far as doing that, if I'm going to license something to a game company, what protections do I need for myself before I sit down with them and tell them exactly what I told you. I have a concept. I know it'll work. I just need somebody that knows how to put it together.
For that, you would need a non-disclosure agreement where they agree not to, you know, take your idea and run, you know, in return for you disclosing the idea to them. You know, again, these things are kind of slippery and leaky, but you know, that's again that's a standard in the business world.
If you're going to do this, and if this idea is potentially as good as you say, it would be worth your hiring an attorney to help you put that together and perhaps to go with you to represent you when you presented this
based
idea.
Based on the main thing that makes everybody buy anything, vanity.
Well, whatever.
Okay, yeah. don't give it away, John.
The ability to see oneself in media.
Well,
okay, you know, it's the whole, hey, look at me generation.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Well,
I just think protecting yourself, you need somebody beside yourself standing up in front of someone else.
All right, John, hey, good luck with that. We appreciate the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. The Copyright Forum is in play. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp are here. Doreen in Pequog. Doreen, you're on.
Hi. I saw online recently, I believe it was on Facebook, where an artist was copying, like superhero characters onto sneakers and then selling these sneakers at high prices. But as far as I could see, the original artist who had done the work was getting no credit. And that set off alarm bells to me.
Yeah, that's a lawsuit. That's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
But I'm guessing they had a license. I mean, you're not going to mass produce sneakers with a superhero on and think you're going to get away with it.
Well, if he's painting them individually.
They were hand-painted.
Oh.
And somebody, when I questioned this guy is crazy putting this on Facebook. He's going to get caught. Someone came back and said there's something called fan art where you could do up to 15 copies.
That's sort of like.
Why is that so funny?
That's sort of like mailing in your copyright.
Yeah, like changing 15% of a painting. You know.
Yeah.
No, there's no such rule.
You can rob 15 banks before you're in trouble.
Like I said in the beginning, this is a lawsuit waiting to happen. So.
Yeah, especially if he's doing Marvel or, you know, I assume he's doing Marvel characters.
I don't know the super characters. I just saw them on the sneakers and thought someone is because I'm an artist, and there's lots of times that I would like to use other things as references.
Yeah,
and that's fine.
But this guy was doing them.
Verbatim.
Other than the fact that he had to change the shape a little bit because it was on a sneaker,
yeah.
It looked like it was just straight out copying.
That's no defense. He's banking. He's trying to sell these things based on the popularity of the characters. So he's selling them on the basis of something he doesn't
own. Well, I must say I haven't seen it back online, so maybe he's in jail by now.
Or he's sold out.
Yeah. Or he's sold out. Well, Doreen, thanks and good luck. 800-348-2551. Robert in Otis. Robert, you're on.
Hey, my question concerns, I'm about ready to publish a novel on Amazon, and I'm using bits of song lyrics as an introduction of each chapter. Do I need to get permission to do that?
I would say no. The music publisher, no doubt, would say yes. And you know, I mean, you're doing kind of what Stephen King does.
An epigram.
Yeah, and I, you know, if it's really short, if it's one line, I think you're going to be okay. If you do more than one line, you know, I mean, doing one line is going to be fair use or it's de minimis use. But if you use more than that, you know, you may run the risk of having a problem. Now, if you're self-publishing on Amazon, there's a very good chance this will just go under everybody's radar
until
your book breaks out, and then you've got, then you know, you've got something to deal with.
That's the long range thinking. You know, I'm giving credit, you know, to the what I've used, you know, as fully as I can get it off of the net. But and I have talked to a few artists who've said, oh, no problem, as long as you give me credit. So
that's
what I was just wondering.
That's actually not accurate. But you know, if you were using a lyric in the narrative of the story, you know, where
yeah.
you know, the character walks into a bar and the song's playing, and you just throw out a lyric from a song,
mm-hmm.
that's going to definitely be okay. But using it as a, what's the
epigram.
Word? An epigram. Wow. That's the name in my next band.
Epigram? All right.
But, you know, then you're a little closer to the line. And
right.
And look, the common refrain is, well, gee, I didn't do this for profit, or I'm not making any money from this. That's not what copyright law is all about.
You know, rather than spend your time dealing with music publishers, which is a total pain in the neck, I would just put the thing out, and if the book takes off, then go and, you know, and make a deal.
All right, Robert, good luck. Thank you very much for the call. We go to Michael in New Paltz. Hello, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me on the air. Great program.
Thank you.
My question is concerning the fact that, so I'm interested in creating a YouTube channel that does music theory analysis of popular music. And I was wondering, so I know YouTube has an algorithm that will predict if you have an existing song that's copywritten
right.
in your video and flag it and take it down. To what extent I could have music in there? Like, let's say if I was demonstrating an existing song on a piano or a guitar myself and then talking about it, if that would be permissible and whatnot.
It would be permissible. It would be
fair use.
It's fair use.
It's definitely fair use. However, the algorithms don't understand fair use. So you put the thing on and then you get taken down, and then you can, you know, when your stuff gets taken down on YouTube, you have a certain amount of time to protest and explain why what you were doing was proper, and you can do it at that point, and then some entry-level person at YouTube will make a decision whether it's fair use or not, which is absurd.
If they know what that is.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they do if they're handling appeals of takedowns. But, you know, you'll have that opportunity, and whether it's successful or not, you know, and I know this is horrible advice, or it's not welcome advice if you're going to put all the effort into making these videos, but I think that's what you're left with.
And you're probably going to have to do it each and every time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm also a jazz musician, and there's been times where I've had things taken down and had them put back up as well already, so I kind of understand that a little bit.
Okay.
And having the actual recording itself in there, is that definitely a no-go?
No, it's still going to be fair use. If you are talking about music theory and using this as an example, that's a classic example of fair use, and that's permissible.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for your answer. Okay. I really appreciate it.
Michael, thanks a lot. What about some of these websites, and there are tons of them, where you can get, say you're a guitar player and you want to get the tab for some famous song, and the chords are there written out and along with the lyrics. Is that fair use?
Probably not, although tablature, whether that's even copyrightable, I would say no.
Well,
the lyrics are.
Yeah, the lyrics are usually there with the chords.
But, you know, I think there's some legit sites that have, made deals with publishers and record companies to do that. Most of them are illegitimate and, you know, are probably on some offshore server. I mean, I found a tablature for I Want to Be a Lifeguard, for crying out loud.
Really?
Really?
And in a perfect world, would you guys get money for that?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. We'd, you know, 2 cents, 3 cents.
For every time someone printed it. All right, let's take a break. The number here is 800-348-2551. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, Poly Law. It's the Copyright Forum. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's the Copyright Forum. 800-348-2551 is our number. Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp, and Polly Law here to answer your questions. Contact information for you folks. Let's get that out there now so that I don't forget by the end of the show. Polly.
PMLaw@ButtonwoodArt.com.
PMLaw@ButtonwoodArt.com. All right, got that. How about you, Paul Rapp?
I'm at Paul@PaulRapp.com.
People ever call you Paulie?
Yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that you don't get upset?
No.
Okay.
No. My middle initial is C, so I leave that out.
They call you Paulie C?
Paul Crap.
Oh, that hurts. How about you, Bill Westwood?
WestwoodMedical.com.
All right, well, thank you all for being here once again. Let's go back to the phones at Ed in Sharon, Connecticut. Ed.
Hi, good afternoon. I was wondering what the panelists thought of, if they've heard of a case recently from Houston, Texas. There was a photographer named Jim Olive who was known for taking difficult and aerial shots of things around the city. And he took a shot of a city that the University of Houston used without his permission in some of their print and web publications. And I believe he won at the lower court level. He'd argued that it was basically a taking by the state. And without compensation, but he lost just recently, I believe a few weeks ago, in the in appeals court, and they said it wasn't a taking, and that the university as a state agency had sovereign immunity. So I was just wondering what the panel was about that. And
yeah,
what would happen in our area if if something similar happened? How the laws in Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York were?
I've had two cases, copyright infringement cases, that were basically booted due to sovereign immunity. It's very frustrating, but unfortunately right now, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. In most states, a state agency could just take your work without compensation.
Yeah. Correct.
That's ridiculous. Sovereign immunity?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the state can't own a copyright, but it can
do whatever it wants.
Yeah.
Right.
That is ludicrous. Ed, you've irritated me.
Is there any movement on any and trying to change the law? Would you have to change constitutions?
I think it's state by state.
No. That's part of the copyright law.
Okay.
And that could be changed when the copyright law changes. And there have been people complaining about this, but it doesn't gain a lot of traction. So.
And in most states, do they not have to compensate you? Or what's the history on this? Do some entities decide, okay, we'll compensate you with whatever we think you deserve?
No, not in my experience. I mean, Paul might know more about it than I.
I don't. I haven't. I mean, New York State, to my knowledge, isn't in the business of infringing on people's stuff. And
in my cases, it was through universities, and because they are arms of the state. Our agencies of the state, they claimed that they were protected by sovereign immunity. They did take the work down, but
that's really an absurd ruling. And when I get home, I'm going to look it up and read it.
It might just have a lot to do with the fact that in New York State, the courts handle a lot more intellectual property cases.
I think any state entity, based on the, if you look at it, Paul, based on what I've read, any state entity that wants to use that as a way of ducking out of an infringement will do so.
Well, but I'm saying that in areas where there's more intellectual property activity in the courts, that the courts might slap
it's,
that
it's,
down. No,
it's written into the law, Polly. Mm. I mean, it's.
Thank you, Ed, for the call. On what basis could they write it into law? If it's one thing, if it's communist China, in a capitalist society where entrepreneurs are encouraged, how do you do that?
Historically, I can't answer that. I've not looked beyond the clause or whatever it is that the 11th.
You can't sue the sovereign unless the sovereign says you can.
Right.
I mean, whatever.
Huh. So that probably goes back to England, right?
Yeah.
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 Okay, the Brits. Mike in Altamont. Mike, you're on.
Hello, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
So my question is, I have a registered trademark for a product. It's a food product. I also use, it's a logo. I use the logo on T-shirts, coffee cups, like marketing materials. So the question is,
one, am I legal using the Circle R on those products? And if not, two, I assume I have to submit a new registration for those products. And if I do, can I lump them all together, or do I have to submit a separate registration for each product?
Well, there's the 48 categories of goods and services, and you know, each one has a separate registration. For clothing, for promotional clothing and stuff, I don't think I would worry. You know, unless you're going to really start wholesaling the things to Walmart, you know. But if you're going to sell them to promote your basic food business, I don't think I would bother with a trademark registration. But you can put the R in a circle on the T-shirts and the hats and whatnot, because it is a registered trademark for you.
Okay, yeah, that's basically where I'm at now. Yep. It's just small. Most of them are giveaways. Once in a while, I sell one at a craft fair. But
yeah.
And if the logo were unique enough artistically, you might be able to register that.
As a copyright. Yeah,
it is. It is. I actually got that registered. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, right.
Bless you.
Yes. Well, you've made the panel very happy. Mike. Thanks a lot for the call. Over now to Bill in Caroga Lake. Hello, Bill.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a recording that I did back in, let's say, 2000, and I got the copyright for one particular song on it. And now, with all the digital abilities, I want to upload it to something like Bandcamp, where people can play it online, and there's also an option where they could download it, and they can download it. I can set where I can download it for money, or I could set where I can download it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, with like Bandcamp or YouTube, where people can play things and download things, if it's a violation of copyright for recordings like that to be uploaded or accessible.
Who wrote the song?
A folk artist in New England.
So you didn't write it?
No.
Okay. For that, you'd probably want to get a mechanical license. And I guess I wouldn't do that just yet, because I think they're redoing that whole, through the Music Modernization Act. I would
how
put it up or call
the playing
call
of the song?
Yeah, you could call the New England artist up and ask him if it's okay for you to post this. I mean, that would be the civil thing to do. And he'll probably say yes, because he'll like having, you know, his stuff up there.
And give him credit.
And is that true for just things like YouTube, if people were playing your recording of a song?
What do you mean, is that true? What's true?
On YouTube, you'll see many many videos which are actually just a playing of a recording of a song.
Right.
And for people to listen to that, is that a violation of the copyright, even if they're not downloading it or buying it?
Probably.
Technically it is. But, you know, most, you know, especially old artists, you know, you're not going to get into trouble doing it. And a lot of times, you know, in old track, the only way you're going to find it is on YouTube, where it seems to have just about everything online.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you get into the more popular and more recent stuff is, you know, where you're probably going to start getting into trouble.
All right, Bill, thank you very much for the call. What about MIDI files? There are a lot of those. And if you wanted to, say, record your own recordings of standards or whatever, there are MIDI files. You can literally buy them for 99 cents in various places. They have to be licensed as well?
I think they come with an implied license. A MIDI file with various sounds on it that you incorporate. Yeah, I think there's a license that comes along with the purchase to incorporate it into other
you can't then sell it, though, could you?
Yeah.
Really? Interesting. All right, over to Susan and Beckett. Susan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about ghostwriting. I used to do an awful lot of ghostwriting. There was never a contract. I got paid whatever I got paid. There was no deal. And there was certainly no copyright. But interestingly enough, some of these things are of interest to anthologists. And a lot of the people who were involved, who ordered the ghosted material, are gone. Do I have any rights regarding this stuff?
When were
even
the,
though it was for hire?
Yeah, there was, but there was no contract, you said, no written contract.
And if no written contract and no copyright.
And well,
no, this was just it was speeches mostly.
When? What was the time frame we're talking about?
Oh, the '70s, the '60s.
Speech writing. Speech writing. Interesting.
Well, and you want to know if you can sell them. Is that your question?
Well, yeah, there was no intention of ever monetizing this except to the person who was giving them the speech.
Right.
But then, and I got paid whatever I got paid. But who knew that these things would be historically interesting to people who were collecting these speeches, and now they are. So my question is, have I the right to sell these or even give them?
Technically, no, but
I think go ahead.
Yeah.
And I think you probably have the right to give them away because the person that's going to be using it is going to be fair use if they're doing it for historical purposes.
But if she wanted to monetize this, technically, she doesn't have the right.
Right.
But then we get back into Paul's gray area.
Yeah, how many times during a show do I say yes, it's infringement? But go ahead and do it.
Right.
But there was no contract. And in a situation like that, the rights belong to the creator.
Pre-78.
But wait, isn't the contract her accepting the money for writing
no.
the speech?
No.
But pre-78, the presumption was if you got paid to do something for somebody else.
The payer owned the copyright.
Owned it, and that flipped in 1978.
Correct.
The work for hire whole thing.
Yeah. Right.
All right, Susan, thanks for the call and good luck. We go to Sandy in Springfield. Sandy. Hello, Sandy.
Got the radio on.
Hi. Could you just turn that radio down a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. You're on.
Okay. I am prone to write parodies to very popular songs. Mostly they would be like Broadway songs by Rodgers and Hart or Oscar Hammerstein. And I've had a lot of people ask me if they could have copies of the words. And so far I haven't given them out because I do not write the melody, and I change the words, but there's just enough of the original so that you would recognize the song. So am I getting myself into trouble if I give them away?
Are you giving them away to friends? You're giving them away to institutions? Whom are you giving them to?
We'll wait another few seconds for the delay. Hello, Sandy.
Oh, boy.
All right. I'm getting the heave-ho sign from Zach, the engineer. Boy, Zach, you are a tyrant. My God. Just calm down in there. All right, over to Karen in Lake Placid. Karen, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My uncle is a professional portrait painter, and he's still painting after, 70 years. He's 90 years old. He painted a series on writers who have inspired him in his life, some of whom are long dead, some alive. His source material is photographs from libraries and the internet. And I'm wondering, is there an issue marketing or selling these paintings?
Yes.
Well, no, not if if you use two or three photos and make a composite. If you do a painting that slavishly imitates the photograph, then you...
Then you're
back into Shepherd Fairy territory.
Yeah. Then you may have a problem. I mean, it would be up to the photographer, or the copyright holder of the photograph, whether they wanted to do something about
it. And then there are issues with what's the word? I'm blanking out here.
Right of publicity.
Right of publicity, and also
in a fine art painting that doesn't apply.
Yeah.
It's got to be advertising.
Well,
or mass-produced items.
Is he looking to license these images, or is he just selling the images?
he just has them hanging in his studio right now, but people have expressed interest in them, and he's refused to sell them.
But they're one-offs.
He thought there might be an issue.
Yeah, I think he could sell the one-off. I think if he got into making prints, you know, that's when, or putting them on T-shirts or whatnot, then you could start getting into trouble, as it looks more like commerce than art. But, you know, I think he'd be fine.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. And now to Mary Kate and Troy.
Hi, guys. Hey. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
A question I've been meaning to ask you about this, Paul. I've started a little video series and on YouTube, and I'm wondering if it's about it's about pairings on food and wine, which there are, you know, a zillion of on YouTube.
Right.
But everyone is different, including mine. And I'm just wondering, is that something I should Circle C, or is it something, do you copyright an idea? I'm not quite sure what the wisest thing to do would be.
I think in the explanation on YouTube, just say copyright Mary-Kate, and you know, copyright 2019 Mary-Kate. And you know, I don't know if registering them makes any sense, since you've got them on YouTube for people.
What
to
format
look at.
Would you do that if you were to register a video at the copyright website?
You would. It would be an audio video work. So
would it be a media serial? Would she add to it each time she does an episode?
Hmm. Maybe.
Would think so.
I've seen it, and it's very good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Can Ray and I be on? Can we come eat and drink?
There's a pairing.
You know, to my agent.
If it's very good, it might be worth registering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
protecting
You got to protect it, because you don't want to come up later and find out somebody else has monetized it and you're left out in the cold.
Now, Mary Kate, let me ask you a question about that. Did you is all the B-roll of the vineyards and such, did you produce that, or did you swipe that from somewhere?
I swiped it only after I found out that I could take like 60 seconds or so and it would be okay.
Uh-oh. We only have about 30 seconds here. You want to castigate her now?
Yeah. Probably not. There's no 60-second rule.
No? You know,
there's no rule at all, so...
So be careful.
Be careful.
Because Paul will come after you, Mary Kate, with guns blazing.
All right. I'll defend
better
you.
And I'll give him some wine.
Thanks a lot for the call. All right. Well, I think we're about out of time here. Once again, Polly Law, how do people find you?
PMLaw@buttonwoodart.com.
Bill Westwood, if someone were to infringe on your copyright and you didn't find out and one of your friends wanted to contact you, how would they do that?
westwoodmedical.com.
And we know which image it was.
All right, that's, you know what? Now we're back. Now we're back to a very delicate area, literally and figuratively.
You're telling
Paul
me.
Rapp, how do people find you?
Paul@paulrapp.com.
All right, thank you all for being here. Support comes from Adirondack Experience, the museum on Blue Mountain Lake, exploring people's connection to the Adirondacks through indoor and outdoor exhibits, activities, and events. adkx.org for details. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. Fisher Ferry General Store, offering freshly prepared food and eclectic gift items, open Thursday through Sunday, FisherFerryGeneralStore.com. Gather, shop, eat. And Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarriers and fabricators used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, AshfieldStone.com. Well, thanks once again to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here. Thank you for listening. As always, great calls. Thanks to Zach the Tyrant Malloy, our engineer. Who answered? Amber Sickles answered the phones today, right? She's gone. She got out of here like a bat out of hell. And a good thing, too. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we talk policing with Albany Police Chief Eric Hawkins and Pittsfield, Massachusetts Police Chief Michael Wynn. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.